Well, tonight we're going to be talking to a true Chicago rock legend, Mr. Carl Giammarisi, co-founding member, lead singer of Chicago's very own Buckinghams, a band that was voted the number one American band in 1967 when they had three top five hits on the charts that year. We're going to play some of the hits. We'll give you one or two of their latter-day songs that might not have been huge hits, but certainly show the band hasn't lost it. And we're going to talk to you about their show coming up on Friday, September 10th at 7:30 at Hobart Art Theater. It's coming up next. Hello, everybody. Tom Lounge is here. It's time for Midwest Beats, a program all about music and the people who make it. Tonight, my guest will be Carl Giammarisi. He is a co-founding member and lead vocalist of the legendary Buckinghams, voted as the number one American band of 1967. They had five songs that year in the national top five. Well, you'll get to hear them tonight. You'll recognize them, I'm sure. In fact, I think we should start off with one of those that you'll be hearing on Friday, September 10th at the Hobart Art Theater in downtown Hobart. The Buckinghams. Here they are with one of their early hits.
So happy. So happy.
Hey, baby, they're playing our song. The one we used to hear when we used to get along. Hey, baby, they're playing our song. Let's get back together. That's where we belong. It's the one with the pretty melody. It's the one that made you fall in love with me. It made us feel so groovy. We fell in love, just like in the movie. Hey, baby, they're playing our song. The one they used to play when we used to get along. Playing our song. Let's get back together. That's where we belong. Pleasant memories are coming back to me. Can't you remember the way it used to be? It made us feel like dancing. It gave us time to think about romancing. Pretty melody. It's the one that made you fall in love with me. It made us feel so groovy. We fell in love, just like in the movie.
Hey, baby, hey, baby.
They're playing our song.
Hey, baby, I'm playing your song. I'm playing their song. They are the Buckinghams, and that was a number five hit in America in 1967. That was the year for those guys. They had so many hits. Don't You Care, Mercy, 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 Susan, Hey Baby, and it all started at the tail end of 1966 with Kind of a Drag and Lottie Miss Claudie. All great hits by Chicago's very own Buckinghams, and those guys are coming to Hobart Art Theater on Friday, September 10th. Mush Music is bringing them. It'll be their first time playing Northwest Indiana in a while because of COVID. and you'll be hearing all the hits that made them great. You might hear a few cover songs as well as some of their 60s friends that they have toured with. Every once in a while, the guys like to kick out some of those in tribute to their friends. And we're gonna have Carl Giamorisi tell us exactly what to expect on Friday, September 10th. Carl is a co-founding member of the Buckinghams. He was there in the very beginning in 1965 and is still with them on the microphone. He's a co-founder. He is the driving force of the band, and we'll have him joining us by phone in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to take you to a song that, well, it was only a few years back. It's kind of cycling it all back. They've been releasing some newer material from time to time, and this is actually the title track of an album they put out in the early 2000s. It's all about reaching back, and this is a song written by Carl himself. This is Latter-day Bucks, Reaching Back. We'll have Carl on the phone in just a minute. Reaching Back, which is what we're going to be doing on Friday, September 10th at Hobart Art Theater. Reaching back to the soundtrack of your youth. If you were around in the 60s, You'll know all the songs you'll be hearing on that night at Hobart Art Theater. It's going to be a great show presented by Mush Music. I'll be your MC that night. I'm Tom Lounges. This is Lakeshore Public Radio's Midwest Beat, and we're going to take you back tonight a little bit. We're going to reach back to some of the hits from the 60s and give you some of the other stuff that you might not remember or should know by the Buckinghams, like that one. Reaching Back came out on Fuel Records in 2007, and before that, I opened up with Hey Baby, they're playing our song, and they're going to play those songs again on Friday, September 10th. And singing those songs for us that night and on record and all over the place, Mr. Carl Giamorisi, co-founding member, and lead singer of the Chicago's very own Buckinghams. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing great, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And I got to tell you that, you know, the Buckinghams music, it never seems to age. It sounds as fun and as exciting as it did back in 67 when you guys were the top of the pops.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I was very surprised when I came on now to hear Reaching Back. I actually haven't listened to that song for a while now, and it sounded really nice. I enjoyed that. I forgot, you move on, and sometimes you forget about what you did, and then something will happen like that will remind you. You know.
Right. And you wrote that song. And again, that goes back to 2007. You guys were recording some new stuff. You did Terra Firma in 98. I remember that was a pretty decent album, as I recall. I Knew You When was a single from that, got some airplay. Reaching Back came out. You've done a few live albums since then. What's going on with the Bucks? I mean, as the lead singer, you guys were touring incessantly. I mean, you were on cruises. You were going coast to coast. You were on the 60s shows, the Salute to the 60s. Right. Then suddenly COVID hits. How did you deal with suddenly standing still?
Well, it was very disappointing. You know, we were in the same boat as everybody else and, feeling terrible about it. And it was scary, too, because what was going on. And, you know, I mean, gosh, people were getting seriously sick and dying from it. So it wasn't anything to take lightly. And we were all a little bit scared. And we followed protocol. And, of course, all the dates, a lot of dates got canceled and a lot of them got moved. Some of them moved into this year. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to, go on. But I don't know. I accepted it pretty well. I really kept busy. I mean, thank God for the recording industry the way it is. Well, what you're capable of now, which is digital recording, and I have what is known as a ProLogic system that Apple puts out. It's kind of like it's a DAW system, a computer-based recording system, a lot like Pro Tools, you know. And so I managed to do a lot of projects back and forth with people using WAV files, you know. And I did a couple albums with a friend of mine who's an older gentleman who always wanted to record his songs that he wrote from years ago. And he I had finally the time to do it, and I did two albums with him. His name is Ron Materic, and he's kind of a throwback artist sounding a bit like maybe Johnny Cash or Elvis or whatever. And I created these tracks for him, and we did a couple albums together. And so that kept me a little bit busy. And then, I did a track for Cleopatra Records. They were reissuing a new album for the group Badfinger. And I did one of the albums, one of the tracks on the album, along with Rick Springfield and Ian Anderson, and there were a whole bunch of different artists that did a track on that album. And so, I did that, and I've been working closely with and really enjoying working with an artist. Her name is Lisa McClowry.
Oh, I'm very familiar with Lisa. She did a lot of work with Jimmy Peterick back in the day.
That's right. That's right. And I connected with her, many months ago. I had a song I thought she might be interested in recording, and got it to her, and then we talked for a while. And then, I don't know, we hit it off. I knew her from years ago, just slightly. I didn't know her very well. So we got to talking, and she had this idea to redo one of our hits, Don't You Care, and turn it into a contemporary love song between two people. And it's very simple with the guitar and the two voices. And, you know, we got a lot of reaction from that recording. We did a video. You know,
okay.
we did it virtually because Lisa is part of a show called The Legends, and she's plays Cher in the show, and it's a tribute show. That's you know, you have a Pat Benatar, you have a Lady Gaga, you've got Elvis, you've got these different you know, people that they do such a great job of covering, and she is phenomenal. I mean, you'd think that you were actually seeing and listening to Cher when you listened to her perform.
Wow.
But she was 7 months on the road, so we were doing all this virtually. So we did a video for, recorded the song and did the video for Don't You Care. And recently we did, together we did a Sting song called Little Something. And her and I did, you know, she created the track on that, and I did the vocals with her. And now we have a video coming out in about a week. For that song, and I have original song. You know, her and I just hit it off really well, and it's been a real pleasure working. You know, she's a Chicago artist,
right?
She's a phenomenal performer and singer. She could, you know, I know I'm talking a lot about her, but I can't say enough good things about about her. She could sing the phone book. I mean, she's just
right.
A phenomenal artist. So anyway, those things kept me busy during this pandemic. And so it wasn't too bad for me, although I was dying to get back to playing with the Buckinghams. And then toward the end of July and all of August, we got really busy. We certainly played a lot of dates in August.
Are you doing dates with Lisa? Is there something planned to take you out on stages together? I know you and Jim Peterick have been doing a songwriters thing.
Right. Jim and I have done a couple shows now, unplugged storytelling nights using some slideshows behind us. We've done, you know, I'm doing the songs acoustically myself with my keyboard player, Bruce Soboroff, and then Jim was using his son, Colin, on his songs, keyboard, and then we joined together. He went on and did a bunch of songs that he wrote and I'd songs and so forth, and then he brought me on, and I did Buckingham songs, and then he came back on and did kind of a drag in Mercy Mercy with me, and then I joined him with on Vehicle and Eye of the Tiger. And that's basically the story. And telling stories, and I had a lot of fun telling some stories and laughing, and some funny stuff. And
mm-hmm.
It just really worked. You know, I remember you were bugging me years ago to
yep.
do something like that. And here I am doing it now. And
I've been wanting to present that for a long time, and it's like, we're both so busy. And now here
now
it is.
Ready.
All right. Well, we got to talk about that. I want to bring that show to town. Maybe we'll talk. We'll talk about that with our mutual friend Paul, who's bringing the Bucks to town on September 10th. Because we're both big fans of yours and Jim's and the band, so I think it'll be something fun to look for.
Well, we are looking at. Well, just to answer your question real quick, Lisa and I don't have anything planned as far as doing live stuff, but it could happen.
Okay.
Anything's possible. You know. In the meantime, we're doing some original tunes too, and doing that. But we're excited to come to Hobart and do that show. It sounds like a really nice little theater.
It's beautiful. It goes back to 1941. It's got some glow murals on the side with black lights. It's a beautiful venue. And the best part is it's right next door to my store, the Record Bin. So you guys got to come over and hang out a little bit and check the record store out.
Well, cool. Well, I look forward to doing that. Because we're going to, be there. I don't know yet. I don't have all the particulars for what time we're doing the sound check and so forth. But, I have a couple fans that are flying in from the West Coast to see the show.
Wow.
We have some dedicated fans, and one's from San Francisco and the other one's from L.A. So that's nice to hear, you know, that they think of us that much that they would fly in and see the show. But, yeah, I'm glad it worked out, and I'm glad we're doing this this venue. And Paul's a great guy.
Yeah, he is. Mush Music has been bringing some great shows to Northwest Indiana for a while. And when he told me that the Bucks were going to be there, he goes, well, I know you got some history with them. Would you like to emcee it? I'm like, are you kidding me? Try and stop me. It's been a while, Carl, since you guys have played here because of the pandemic and everything else that's been going on. But you were a regular every year at Star Plaza Theater with the Salute to the 60s show. And then you played the casino, and then everything went to hell, and now you're coming back. So this will be the first time here.
That didn't work out so good. The Star Plaza was my favorite venue. And, and to be able to say that, based on how many different venues we play through the years and through the year. And do you know that we hold the record for we played the Star Plaza 30 years in a row.
Wow.
Every year, 30 years. And nobody else has done as you know, matched that record. And it was a tremendous, we had such a great following there, and it was so much fun to play.
You always packed it, too. I mean, the people never got tired of hearing those hits, and I imagine it's going to be kind of crazy at this show because it's been a few years. I mean, no one has had a chance to really see you and hear those songs again.
Right. No, I'm really, you know, we haven't played, like I said, we had a very busy this past August, but we really didn't play around Chicago that much.
Right.
You know, I did four Happy Together tour dates out of town, and then...
we did Cornerstones.
Did the Cornerstones.
Right.
The only Chicago dates was the one Cornerstone on the 29th, and then we played just recently on the 31st in Hillside, a big festival, and I couldn't tell you how many people showed up for that. Seriously, it was in the thousands. I mean, it was a big, big festival show. And then we did Oshkosh, Wisconsin with Cornerstones, and I also did Elmwood Park Festival. But that was it as far as around Chicago, and then everything else was out of town. And you know, did a date with Peter Noon in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and we were on the East Coast a little bit, and a casino up above we flew into Des Moines, and it was the Wild Rose Casino in Emmitsburg. And that's you know, that was our Iowa date, and and of course you know, we were, as you know, we were inducted into the Illinois Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right. I was just going to address that. That just happened about 2 weeks ago. The Illinois Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Joliet, and the ceremony was just recently. Correct.
Right. We couldn't be there because. We were performing on that night. The induction was on the 31st in Joliet at the Rialto Theater. And so I connected with Dennis Tufano and asked him to accept the, you know, our induction and give a little speech. And him and I went over it, and that's what he did. And so he was there, and luckily he was able to come in and do that. And, and it looked like what I've seen of it as far as some video, it looked like it really was a real success. And Ron Romero, who's organized this whole Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, he's our main guy there. And he tagged me for being on the advisory board for that, too. But Ron is going to come out to Hobart to present us
excellent.
That night.
You know? I'll look forward to meeting him. I know when this first started, I was in contact with him a bit. And in fact, I was one of those that first sent in a check to get my mug and my T-shirt for the Illinois Rock and Roll Museum on Route 66 and the Hall of Fame. And just a shout-out to everybody. Among the others that were voted in, Cheap Trick, Ides of March, REO Speedwagon, Chess Records. I think Styx was in this class, weren't they?
Who is
Styx?
That?
I think Styx was.
Oh yeah, Styx is in it. Yeah.
Chicago.
Chicago, Buddy Guy.
New Colony 6, other cornerstone bands. I mean, so many great artists, Shadows of Night. Did Crying Shames make the cut? Do you remember?
I don't know. I don't think so, this time around. But I know there were, I think, a total of 10 artists this time. But of course, you know, I mean, we're honored. I mean, you know, if Chicago, you know, Illinois is, you know, that's our home. You know, it's where we got started. And of course, you know, the down in Springfield, the Abraham Lincoln exhibit, they have the State of Sound, I think is what it's called, or they have a part of it now that honors music entertainers from Illinois, and they have a coat that I wore on stage back in the 60s on display, too,
wow.
Down there.
And, is that the coat you wore at Star Plaza Theater that night? Do you remember that? And you yeah, said it doesn't quite fit now?
No, it isn't that one.
Okay, that was one. Funny. That was a good bit that you did.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. You know, I can, for whatever reason, I can squeeze into that coat. The one I gave the exhibit down in Springfield, I couldn't put that one on. I couldn't even get, I can't believe how skinny I was. I couldn't even get my arm in the sleeve.
Wow. Now, was that one of those, like, Union jackets that you had on the cover of the albums back in 67?
Yeah, it wasn't the Army, the Union jackets, Confederate or Union jackets. It was, you know, the matching suits we wore. It was one of the suits that I think we had about five different matching suits we used to wear back in the day that they were designed by MGM Studios, and they had that Edwardian cut, you know,
right.
It was very tailored and very tight waistcoat, you know, and it was kind of a brownish with a black lapel, and that's the one that I gave them to put on exhibit.
Surprised you kept it all these years.
Yeah, I was amazed that I found it. I was going through my stuff because they were asking me for a coat, and the one you're talking about, I have. But that's pretty ratty looking. It's pretty beat up. So I was looking for something, because this coat still looked like new, you know. And so I was happy to give that one instead. But you know, it's an honor. We're very honored to be inducted and be a part of that. And, you know, we've also been inducted into the Iowa Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and we're the only out-of-state band to be inducted into the Iowa.
I was going to ask, why Iowa? What's the connection?
Well, I don't know, other than we played there so much through the years. You know, we really have played the state of Iowa quite a bit. You know, you know, we even got busted once in Iowa. So. some of our crew had some marijuana or whatever, you know, way back in 1968.
Right, right. You know, yeah, blame it on the crew. It's always the crew's fault.
Yeah, it's always the roadies, you know. But they inducted us.
That's cool.
I guess we're taking it one state at a time.
Right, right. Well, I just looked it up for my listeners. The class of 2020 inductees were REO, Chicago, Cheap Trick, Buddy Guy, Muddy Waters, Dick Biondi, of course, God bless him, Larry Lujack, my hero that got me into radio, WLS Radio AM, which basically exploded everybody in Chicago, The Bucks, The Ides of March, and Chess Records. Those were the ones that finally made it as the inductees in 2020. And I guess the 2021 nominations are being submitted now, from what I understand.
Yeah.
So we can vote for the Shadows and all the other guys, Crying Shames, on that ballot. But I'm excited to meet Ron, because I think this is quite an adventurous project that that he's kind of spearheading here. And I'm excited. I love being a member of it. Like I said, I drink my coffee in my Illinois Rock and Roll Museum on Route 66 designer mug, and I'm excited. So I'm very proud of you guys. I mean, we have a lot of history together, and to see you and the Ides, who I also have history with, in the introductory classes, it says something. And the fact you guys are both still out there with original members, still doing it, and from time to time releasing newer material. So I think that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Tom? Thank you so much. You're one of those people in the business that I look forward to talking to, and you're a major supporter. It's people like you that that keep us out there and help us, and we don't take that lightly. You know, you've been around for quite some time with the Bucks and the resurgence in the 60s. And you know, you designed that first newsletter.
That's right. We rebooted your fan club in 1987,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it was something like that. I know, you know, Susan Rakus just started working with us, too, around that time. So I knew it had to be like 87, 86, 87, something
yeah,
like
somewhere
that.
In that. And we figured once we got it up and running, I said, you know, I kind of jump-started it, but we need a real fan that's not in the business to run it. And, of course, Susan was right there, and she's been with you for all these years.
Yes, she has. She's been remarkable how she hangs in there with all the grief we give her. hangs in there.
She loves it, though.
She loves doing it, and she advances our dates for us and takes care of that part of it. And of course, it's changed quite a bit since we started. Now, you know, we didn't have social media
and
Facebook and all that at the beginning, you know, and we do now. And there's a lady, Dawn Lee Wakefield, that helps me out a great deal with all that, because she's a wizard on social media and, you know, more acting more like a publicist, and that helps a great deal. And, you know, the business has changed so much since we started.
Right, you know, right.
You could imagine. I'm always amazed people come up to me with old pictures, and when I see the ones from the 60s, I go, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, it's like another life. It's so long ago, and I don't even think about it. But when I see photos from, say, 10, 12, 15 years ago, I go, oh, my God, I'm getting old. You know, you see the changes that happen.
But the thing is, your voice is still very, very strong. What do you do? Is there a special regimen or anything you do to take care of your voice? Because, I mean, everybody ages, but your voice has aged very, very well. You still can hit the songs and the notes. And
I have to work really hard at it. I spend hours every day. No, I don't do anything. I tend to take care of myself. Getting enough rest, sleep is important. And warming up a bit and exercising your voice. I'm good, you know, as long as I'm not sick in any way or have a cold or anything. It's better for me to sing every day, you know, when we're performing than it is to have a long layoff, because then it gets a little rusty. But I'm blessed with that. You know, my dad was a great singer, had a great voice his whole life. And I guess I took after him, because he just always seemed to be able to sing. You know, he was more the old style standards that he would sing. But you know, until his later years, when he was much older, he was still able to carry a tune and sing. You know.
Wow.
So I'm very fortunate. I was blessed with that.
So this is kind of something in the DNA with you, then. It's that Italian thing.
I think it is.
Okay.
You know, it's my dad always said, because I'm Italian, I'm Sicilian, actually. And he says, oh, the Sicilians have the best voices, you know.
Right. And there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, look at Sinatra. Look at Tony Bennett. Look at all these guys. I mean, they're still out there all these years. Well, they're not out there now, but, you know, Tony was still out there. And Frank, up until the last of his years, was out there and still hitting the notes.
I mean, my God, you know, he was the master at phrasing.
Al Martino, another old friend of mine, you know, he sang until his dying day. I mean, amazing. So I think it is something in the culture as well.
Yeah, Perry Como. He always had a great voice. You know,
the singing barber.
He never seemed to get old, you know,
right,
for a long, long time. And Tony Bennett, I thought he got, you know, I knew him. You know, his voice, and, you know, going back in the 60s, and he always, I mean, the guy's a phenomenal singer. He has a great, great voice, but I like them in his later years. There was a little different earthiness and little raspiness to his voice that just endeared him, you know, made him sound even better to me, you know. He's just so great at interpreting a song, you know, that's phenomenal, you know.
Speaking of long-lasting, the hits of the Buckinghams have lasted decades. 66, Kind of a Drag, came out. I mentioned in the beginning of the show that in 1967, you guys were voted America's Greatest American Pop Band. You had five singles in the top 10. Susan, Hey Baby, Mercy, 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 Don't You Care, Lottie, Miss Claudie, all charted in 67. That had to be a year that is a blur to you. I mean, you were on all the major television shows. You were on all the charts. You were touring. What do you remember most about that year?
Oh, my God. You're right, though. It is a blur. And, you know, what comes to mind is, you know, certain venues we played. You know, I'll just get a vision of see those, you know, see the stage, see the, you know, and remember traveling and you know, I think the TV shows stick out more than anything. You know, I remember distinctly doing the Smothers Brothers show, and I remember the stage, what it looked like, and of course Ed Sullivan. You know,
right.
I remember thinking that this theater is not as big as it looked on TV. You know, it wasn't, but it was phenomenal to be. You know, that was, I've said this a million times, that it, you know, the epitome of success back then was to be invited to play on at the Ed Sullivan show.
Right.
And some of the others, you know, I remember American Bandstand and talking with Dick Clark, and then in later years, in the late 80s, early 90s, doing some live shows with him, which was, you know, sharing a dressing room with Dick Clark, you know.
Right.
You know, we're just remembering a lot of the acts that we were on the same bill with, you know, and back in the day, and, you know, sharing the stage with those guys. And I'll tell you, it's a blur because it was going by real quick. I mean, that year, 67, I mean, gosh, I was barely out of high school, you know, in 66 when Kind of a Drag was starting to take off.
Right, right.
And all of a sudden, you know, We were at 67. We must have played getting pretty close to 300 dates that year.
Wow.
And, you know, we were always on the road. You know, we would take a break to go into New York and record another song, and then we go right back out on the road again, you know, from there. And so we didn't have much time to really think about it and to just, you know, I probably thought more about it years later, and just remembering little things. Remember being in New York City. Remember some of the record stores we would visit. You know, I remember being chased by a whole lot of young girls into a store and begging the owner of the store to lock the door. You know. And, you know, it was like a scene out of A Hard Day's Night.
Right, right. The trials and tribulations of pop stardom.
Oh, yeah. I remember looking over to my left when we were performing on stage, and I see Nick being dragged across the stage by, like, three girls. And, you know, those were the days of the screaming.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, that was... That was the tail end of the real pop side of rock. 68,
right.
You guys did In One Ear and Gone Tomorrow. It was a little more psychedelic, a little more rock-edged, and the times were changing. Was it hard for the Buckinghams to change with it? Because you guys had your niche. You were such good pop stars. And even Susan, I remember you telling me, because that was done as a pop single, and then in the production, they added all that weird psychedelic kind of stuff in the middle of it. And I remember you saying you didn't even know about it till you heard the playback.
Yeah, that's true. Our producer, James William Gersio, put that in there. We didn't know what he was going to do because, you know, we went into the studio in New York to record the song. And, you know, we had a formula for doing it, how we do it, because we didn't have a lot of time to hang out. So, you know, we decided on the song, and then we would record the basic track with whatever the track required, you know, bass, drums, piano, maybe some guitars. And then we would do all the vocals and the background vocals and everything. And then we would leave, and we would leave it up to Jimmy Gersio to finish it. And, you know, he would sweeten it. Sweetening, of course, was strings and horns and and you know, EQing the whole thing and mixing it and getting it to sound really good, and then it would be mastered, and then we would hear it after it was done, that whatever he put on there, we didn't have a lot to say for as far as what he put on the tracks. Mm-hmm. So when we did Susan, there was a space in the song, like click track, and we kept asking him, well, what's going to go in here? And he was like, well, I got this idea. I'm going to do something here. You guys, you'll hear it. You know, you're going to like it. You're here. You know, we heard it for the first time at some friend's house when we were on the road, and we got a test pressing. In those days, that's what you'd get. It's an acetate or a test pressing of the song. And we thought it sounded great when we put it on, and we thought everything, the strings, the horns, it was a really nice mix. And it got to that part in the song, and we were like, what the hell is this?
I can imagine.
We thought it was, we got a flawed mix here. Something was wrong with it. We put it on again, and same thing happened, you know. And then we realized this is what he wanted to do in there. And I don't think we warmed up to it at all. I don't think any of us really liked it that much.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of radio stations, it became a hit anyway, but, you know, they would edit that out, you know. It
was right.
Right after
bridge. He was looking ahead of the curve, seeing that it was changing. You know, Tommy James and those guys went from pop to doing Crimson and Clover. And, mm-hmm. You know, it was the time. And I think James was trying to get ahead of the curve. But I agree. I didn't think it really worked with that song. But it's all hindsight. But you know what? It was still a hit. It went to number 11 on Billboard, number 7 in Cashbox. So you can't say it wasn't a hit.
Yeah. I joked about it when I did the Unplugged show with Piedrich, and I told a story about that song, and I said, and here I am with an acoustic guitar, you know, and I said, and tonight we're going to do it. I'm going to put that in the song.
Wow.
And of course, that got a laugh, you know, no way that was going to happen. But, it gave us something to talk about, and you know, you're right. I mean, it seemed like overnight radio went from AM to FM.
Yeah,
and the whole format's changed, and all of a sudden there were concept albums and songs were, you know, we didn't have to do a 2-minute song anymore, 2:20 or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were four-minute songs, and, double record albums, and see, we didn't fit into that because it was hard to transition. I think our first attempt was when we did the album Portraits.
Okay.
And that was a concept album, and that was sort of our Sergeant Pepper. And we thought, well, this is going to be cool. You know, we put a lot of time rehearsing for that album in L.A. We rented a house and rehearsed it to death, and we were really involved in recording the tracks. And I did a lot of guitar on that album. And but we couldn't find our audience wanted to hear pop songs, you know.
But that one had Hey Baby on it, and it also had Susan, didn't it?
Well, yeah, you know, they sort of don't fit real well into the album, if you listen to the whole album.
Mm-hmm.
But Columbia insisted on putting those songs because they were hits, and they hadn't been on an album yet.
Yeah, needed a single.
And they needed a single. They wanted to sell albums, and so they put them on there. And, you know, we were not much different than what happened to all of us. I've discussed it many times with, you know, being on Happy Together. You know, Gary Puckett and I are good friends, you know, and, of course, the Turtles and many of the groups, the pop groups back then. We all sort of went by the wayside at that point, you know, right around when Monterey Pop happened and it was Cream and Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. It changed, kind of left us behind for a while, you know. There was a new audience that was listening to this heavier underground sound. And I was enjoying it, too. I mean,
right.
You know, I like that stuff, you know. I was getting off listening to Hendrix and Cream and whatever.
Now, do you do any of the album cut stuff in the live shows? I know you do all the hits because the fans come to hear the like 7 or 8 top hits. But do you ever stick in just for fun, just for giggles, anything off a deeper cut off Portraits, perhaps something that you said you know was your Sgt. Pepper, or maybe Back in Love Again, which I thought was a great song.
We do Back in Love Again.
Okay,
we still do Back in Love Again. We don't really perform anything off of Portraits. I mean, off of Portraits.
Other than the hits.
We've done a little bit off of In One Ear and Gone Tomorrow. We do a song called You Misunderstand Me that Marty Greb wrote. We do Lottie Miss Claudie. We did a cover version on the Kind of a Drag album of, You Make Me Feel So Good, you know, the Zombies tune.
Yeah.
You don't need any reason, do you, baby? We've done that, and I actually sang that song on the original. And I think it's a pretty bad version of it on the Kind of a Drag album, because we were young kids, and I've talked to the Zombies, and Colin Blonson, I mentioned to him once, that we did that, and he said, "Oh yeah, I know. I heard it."
I
and
know.
That's all he said. He didn't say I love it or anything. He
right.
just said, "Oh yeah, I know. I've heard, you know." And I've re-recorded that song when we did re-records of all the Buckingham songs, and that was one of them. And when we did a show, an unplugged show, right when the pandemic hit in March of 2020. At the Genesee Theater, we did a show with the group America, and we're going to do that again coming up too with them. And we did unplugged. It was just me, Nick, and Dave Zane, our guitar player, and we did it acoustically. And I did some songs that, you know, I did a little bit of Tufano and Jim Morrissey,
right,
in that show, and we did that song, You Make Me Feel So Good, and few of those that seem to fit into the format real good. And but yeah, you're right, we really don't do enough of the album cuts off of those albums.
Well, I told you before, and I'll say it again, one of my favorite cuts from the Buckinghams, and I have to go back to the vinyl to keep listening to it, is Pity Be the Dragon Hunter. And I have played that on the radio, and I know that's not a big fan favorite, but one day I'll have you play that one.
Well, you know, one of the problems with that, I mean, think about how different we were. Kind of a raw sounding garage band when you listen to the Kind of a Drag album.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden we were in Columbia Studios doing that Time and Charges album, which has Pity Be the Dragon on it.
Right.
And Guercio, I don't know what he was thinking. I think he was a big fan of Otto Preminger movies. You remember that?
Yeah.
You know, the big production. All these songs with timpanis and all this big, massive sound. And this is 1967, and the technology didn't even allow us to reproduce that on stage.
Hmm.
I mean, my God, the Beatles couldn't do Sgt. Pepper.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so, you know, that was a real, change in our sound in a lot of ways. And so it was very difficult to reproduce that on stage. You know?
That was my first Buckinghams album. I bought that when it was brand new at a drugstore here in Highland, Indiana. I saw that and I'm like, I like these guys. My sister used to play them. They were in this class of 66 and 65, I believe, my sisters, and they were big fans of you and the Shadows and all those guys. And
yeah.
And I remember my first, it was actually my third album, Behind the Monkey's Greatest Hits and the Hair soundtrack. I remember picking up Time and Charges at the drugstore.
Well, you know, you just reminded me, one cut we do play on and off, and we still do it, is our version of the Beatles song, I'll Be Back.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's on there. And it's very different from the way the Beatles did it, but we do it the way it is on the album, on Time and Charges.
So you haven't put your repertoire together yet for the 10th, have you? Or have you?
Pretty much.
Okay. Is it in the set?
Much.
Is it in the set?
It's not.
You just broke my heart again.
Well, you know, I was driving in my car one night just recently, and I like to listen to the Beatles channel, too, on Sirius.
Right.
And I had that on, and all of a sudden this song comes on, and I'm going, because, you know, they play other artists that covered Beatles songs mm-hmm. or whatever. And I'm listening, I said, wait, that song sounds familiar. And all of a sudden it clicked. It was our version of I'll Be Back that they played
wow.
on the Beatles channel. You know, so that was really wonderful to hear that, you know.
It's got to be cool to still, you know, be cruising around wherever you're going. You're on vacation, you're with the wife or whatever, and all of a sudden you hear one of your songs come on the radio.
It really is. I mean, I'm as thrilled as I was back in 1966, the first time I heard a song on the radio by us, you know.
You told me in one of our previous interviews, I said, what were some of the highlights? You said hearing our song for the first time in the car on the radio and then going on stage every night and finding that people still want to hear me all these decades later sing those songs. Those were the two highlights you named. Has anything changed?
No, not really. I mean, that's still a thrill to me to hear these songs still being played on the radio. And, you know, I'll have people text me all of a sudden and say, I'm in blah, 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 Florida somewhere, and your song, whatever it is, Kind of a Drag, is on the radio.
Right.
Right now, as I'm, you know, and it just puts a big smile on my face, you know, to know that they're still being played.
Well, Carl, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I'm so looking forward to seeing you guys again. It's been too long.
Yeah, me too. It has been too long. And we are looking forward to this show at in the Hobart Theater there. It's sounds like a wonderful venue. You know, I love playing smaller theaters and smaller rooms like that because, you know, it's just so much more personable. And,
right.
And you could connect with an audience and, you know, it's a lot of fun. I mean, you know, we've got one coming up October 8th in Las Vegas at the Golden Nugget, and that's a room like that, too. It's just
right.
a smaller theater. And it's just, I mean, I love playing whatever, you know,
right.
In any venue, but those are special. So Hobart's going to be fun.
Friday, September 10th, and keep up with the Bucks at thebuckinghams.com and get your tickets for the Buckingham Show at the Hobart Art at brickartlive.com. A couple months back, I had James Holvey on the show with his new album.
Oh, Jimmy.
Yeah. So he had a lot of nice things to say about you guys. So we're going to close out with the song we were talking about. Holvey wrote this along with James Gershio, and this is Susan. Carl, we'll see you
cool.
on September 10th.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, Tom. It's been too long, and you're a great guy. We appreciate all the support you've given us through the years. I mean that sincerely.
Thank you. Here's the song. Catch Carl, Nick, and the guys again September 10th. It's a Friday night at Hobart Art Theater. Taking you home with Susan. I'm Lounges. I'll be back on Friday. Until then, stay safe. Adios.
Looks like I'm losing. I'm losing my mind. I'm wasting my time. Susan, do you have to be confusing? I ask myself why you're saying goodbye. No other girl could ever take the place of you.